Previously on Willing to Adapt.
This is one of my favorites. Today we are talking about the original fairy tale version of The Sleeping Beauty.
Fairy tales have existed for quite some time. Mm-hmm.
There's a fallacy out there that Disney created these things.
Yes.
When they really did not, they just adapted them. You can see it has like the semblance of the original story, but it's definitely less what they would say immoral.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, they just kind of cleaned it up, and they definitely took out the aspect of rape.
Yes, that definitely was gone. Yeah.
I'm Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
Have you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt.
All right. Welcome back. If for anybody who has not listened to the first half of the Sleeping Beauty episode that we did, please go back and listen to that. It goes and talks about the source material for Sleeping Beauty, which is interesting to say the least. How about that? There are three main versions. The first one is fun. But for this episode, we're mainly going to be talking about the first major adaptation that Sleeping Beauty ever saw. And that is the ballet by Tchaikovsky.
What? Disney was not the first?
Nope, it was not.
I know, I'm just joking.
So you knew that there was a ballet version of Sleeping Beauty, right?
I did, yes, because okay. I'm familiar with Tchaikovsky.
There you go. Mm-hmm. When was the first time that you watched it? It was for this podcast.
It was for this podcast, yes, on Sunday. Or Monday?
Specifically for this podcast, I had Romy and I separately watched the 2008 Royal Opera Ballet Company's version of Sleeping Beauty.
Wait, I watched a free one on YouTube.
Did you?
It was just some like high schoolers dancing around.
Stop it.
I'm just kidding. No, I specifically made sure to watch the Royal Ballet, which I'm kind of glad after talking to you earlier about how professional is better than non-professional.
Oh, it's so much better.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
it's like saying I went to go see a Broadway show versus I went to go see a high school production of a Broadway show.
So I honestly, up until today, or not today, but the day I watched it, my full exposure to ballet was clips that I've watched with Eric in the past when we've discussed it about opera and ballet.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to actually enjoy it a little bit more thanks to our previous discussions. I was able to actually paid attention to...
It's good.
Yeah, to things that I think otherwise I would not have.
I had a moment where I was thinking, maybe I should have watched this with him because I could have pointed some things out.
Probably, because there were little things where I was like,
"Yeah,
I have
you
no
probably
idea
struggled
going
with
on.
The pantomime.
Not as much as you would think.
Good.
There were some I did, but most
you
of it I
did
not.
You had to pay attention.
So I... Okay.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, I opened a website,
okay,
and I kind of went with the website.
But you know
the
what,
synopsis
you did it, so...
To figure out...
Yes.
Yeah, because there were some things
you see,
who
most,
the heck is this?
That's what people don't understand about ballets and operas, is they always have a synopsis. So you can always look at the synopsis ahead of time, and you'll know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Plus, I got the names.
There you go. Ballet wasn't really on my radar when I was growing up. For the most part, like, I knew ballet existed, but it wasn't something I really went to go see or anything. And I knew like some things here and there, but it's funny because when I was in high school, my sophomore year, my old teacher from when I used to do shows at my old church, her name was Miss Clayley, and the sweetest woman. I hope she's listening to this so she can hear this. She was the sweetest person, and she also ran a dance studio. And I knew she ran a dance studio, but I never really saw anything she had done except maybe one year when I was like a kid dating a girl at my church, where it's like not really your girlfriend, but like you called her your girlfriend. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And she was in a production of The Nutcracker with her, and so like I did see that when I was younger, but anyways. I remember my sophomore year, my brother and I were both asked by her, Miss Clayley, if we would be in the opening party scene for the Nutcracker, because she really needed more guys.
Oh, okay.
And so we only had to do basic dancing. It was more just acting than anything. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, of course, sure. Anything for Miss Clayley, you know. She's. Mm-hmm. I was like, that'd be fun. And my brother's like, no ballet. Horrible. Like, and it was, you know, there was still like the idea, and it's still kind of around today, where it's like, if you do ballet, you're gay, or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think my mom kind of convinced him, and I was just like, yeah, let's do it. And he's like, but nobody can know, you know? And so I went, and it was actually a lot of fun. Like, I really enjoyed it. You know, it wasn't professional, but it was a lot of fun. And mm-hmm. she'd been doing it for a long time, so she had a lot of the kinks worked out. And I remember watching, like, everybody performing and getting ready. And because I got to go watch the rest of the show after I was done in the opening.
Mm-hmm.
And just watching how everybody had to prepare and, like all the cool things they got to do, especially the guys, because the guys got to, like, lift all the girls and, like, throw them around and all these things. Like, I was like, this is fun. This is cool. But then it's also really tough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so tough on the body and, like... I was like, this is not easy. Like, this thing is a sport, you know?
Just watching them, watching the performance.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah.
But my brother and I both really liked it, and so we both decided to sign up. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. And my brother did it in secret. I didn't care. But my brother did it in secret. I will be straight up with you all. I was very heavy in high school. Mm-hmm. I did not have the body for this, but I could lift girls.
Mm.
I think that is... That and the fact that this woman is, like, the sweetest Christian woman that just wanted people involved.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely I was included because I got to lift people.
That's funny.
But my brother at first really didn't want to do it, but he had just finished playing baseball his freshman year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't keep him on the team because he didn't make the cut for JV or varsity. And he was upset by that, obviously. And he was told, you know, if you do ballet, it'll actually really help with your flexibility.
Mm.
And he's like, sure, fine. Like, I'll do ballet. And he fell in love with ballet.
Wow.
Yeah. He it, like, hit him like a brick, apparently. Like, mm. he did like a 180. And it was funny. He was like really popular because mm. he was like one of the few guys his age there.
Yeah.
And so it was funny because my brother fell in love with it, and he ended up being the Nutcracker many years.
Wow.
Like, he worked up to it, and he took it very seriously. And then that's what he ended up doing. He went to school. He went to the University of Oklahoma for this.
Wow. I knew he does ballet, but I didn't realize that.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, and he went there, which is, you wouldn't think it's a great school for ballet, mm-hmm. but they're like a feeder school for a lot of professional ballet companies.
Wow.
Yeah. And... he ended up dancing professionally with the Sacramento Ballet for, I can't remember how many years, maybe 3 or so. And he got married, and I think he went to settle down. And, like, you really just can't do ballet for a long time because it's mm-hmm. It just really wears on you.
Mm.
It's so much work and just, like, what you have to do to your body.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's gorgeous, but oh my gosh, it's so much.
Mm.
And... Anyway, so, like, they moved down here, and he ended up teaching, oddly enough, at my sister went to performing arts school for dance and other things, and he actually taught at her school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he didn't have a credential, but now he does. He went mm-hmm. back to school. But now he just teaches. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He also, like, teaches biology and other things, but, yeah. So, a lot of what I know, I learned kind of from him, too.
Okay.
Yeah. But, like, I can say I did dance ballet. I was not great at it, but I did it. And I really appreciate it now. I don't think I would ever really want to do it again.
Yeah.
Like, I like to kind of bust out a small move here and there, but I probably don't look great. Every once in a while, I find myself standing in fifth position, which probably doesn't mean anything to you.
Yeah, it means nothing to
me. It's just one of the ways you stand.
Okay.
It's where, like, your feet are like this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, yeah, it just means that I'm more flexible than you think I would be right now.
Interesting.
Yeah.
In the ghetto, we didn't do ballet.
Stop.
We didn't talk about it.
Yes, you did.
So, the ghetto adjacent neighborhood I lived in. The ballet was actually, honestly, I'm sure I saw commercials for it, or I saw people talking about it or making fun of it, but that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you can find a professional ballet production, like, in movie theaters,
mm-hmm.
and I'm always like, do it, go.
Hmm.
Yeah, ABT, the American Ballet Theater, they're very great. It's fun because I don't know if you know who Mikhail Baryshnikov is.
I do, actually.
Okay, there you go. Mm-hmm. But for those who don't know, he was a very big name professional ballet dancer from back in the day when the Soviet Union was still around.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason why he's famous is because he basically left and came to America.
Mm.
Like, while he was out here, he became like an expatriate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know his whole story, but like he now, I think he still is the director for ABT. He was for a very long time, if he's not now.
Yeah, no, I vaguely remember, now that you mentioned it, I vaguely remember, like, it would be a plot device of ballet dancers coming to America from the Soviet Union and some TV show, and they're defecting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, part of that's because in Russia, ballet became very political.
But it was there during the time of the Tsars, too, right?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, real quick, I'll tell you why I wanted to pick the Royal Opera House version, and then I'll give a very brief understanding of ballet.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll talk about the actual Sleeping Beauty ballet.
Okay.
I'd like to give some context. So, I chose the Royal Opera Company version, and the one we watched was from 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Royal Ballet is a British, internationally renowned classical ballet company, and they're based at the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden, London, England. They're the largest of the five major ballet companies in Great Britain, and the Royal Ballet was founded in 1931, and it became the resident ballet company of the Royal Opera House in 1946, and it has purpose-built facilities within the premises. It was granted a royal charter in 1956, and it became recognized as Britain's flagship ballet company. And part of the reason why I chose this is, one, it's fun because a little bit of history. During the Second World War, when everything was kind of shut down in England, the Royal Opera House was a dance hall.
Hmm.
Like, they weren't really putting on productions.
Yeah.
Mainly because of rationing and people going off and fighting and stuff. But it's fun because back when they reopened, right after the war, in 1946, they reopened, and that was when the Royal Ballet, like, went there.
Mm.
Yeah, and so their very first show there was Sleeping Beauty. Yeah, and they, like, made do. Like, apparently, when I was looking at the research for it, the costume designer and stuff, like, literally used, like, pipe cleaners and stuff on costumes because of all the rations that they had from the war.
Okay.
But, like, it was their first time they were able to do a production.
Wow.
Yeah, and so the version I showed you was, like, the anniversary of that.
Okay.
Right.
With better costumes.
Well, yes, of course. Yeah. But it just, you can see the scale, like, mm-hmm. like how amazing it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, before, again, we move on to Sleeping Beauty, the ballet. Very, very, very brief history, and my brother's going to kill me if I get it wrong. So, the tradition of ballet, where it comes from originally, did you do any research on this?
I did not, know.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Because part of the reason was because I watched some YouTube videos and I didn't think you did.
Okay. Yeah.
So, from the best of my recollection, ballet is interesting because it comes from the Italian word balletto. And I think it means little dance. But it was a court dance. So, if you go back to... back in the day, I can't remember if it was like 1600s. I think it was 1600s. Back in like royal courts, it was very orderly, very very specific about how you had to act, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And so that's why, like, you know, you hear things about like scraping when you're bowing and things like that. Like, there was a way that you had to dress at court, which is why you hear court dress. Like, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of ways you had to act and so on and so forth, right? And so ballet comes from that. Like, it was a type of dance, essentially, that you did there in court.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm sure there's a lot more to it that I'm just not remembering and I don't know. But that's where it first got its origin. Like, it was never really meant for entertainment, necessarily. But then part of the reason why it started spreading and changed when it did is when Catherine de' Medici was married, I think, to one of the Henrys. And it made its way to France. And it's funny because I remember reading somewhere that the way that people talk about ballet is, take this as you will, that the Italians invented it, the French evolved it, and the Russians perfected it.
That makes sense. I can see that. Yeah.
And so in France, it's funny because I didn't know this actually. King Louis XIV loved to dance. Like, he danced in ballets.
Which one's the one that was...
The Sun King.
Okay.
Yeah, in he's the one that built Versailles to be what it is.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense because he was very big on protocol, which is part of the reason, like, how the way he would, like, control the aristocrats in his kingdom. But he would dance growing up. And he actually danced the role of the sun god in one of them, which is how he ended up getting the title of Sun King.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so part of the reason why ballet evolved to the way it did is because of him, but also there was more to it than that. Just, I'm boiling it down. I can't remember exactly how ballet made its way to Russia, except that in Russia, during Imperial Russia, it was actually very metropolitan, Russia, back in its day, and it had, people would go, and, like, in Europe in general, people from all over the Europe would go and teach in the palace, and it didn't matter where you were from, necessarily, because you wanted the best from wherever, you know?
Yeah.
And Russia was no exception. So, I can't remember specifically how it got to Russia, so much as, I think it was just one of the ways that Russia tried to be more like the rest of Europe, and so they adopted a lot of things that Europe was doing.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But I think, if I remember correctly, France was the first place that there was a professional ballet company.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, the most popular ballets that we know of today, like any normal like layperson would know of today, are probably the three by Tchaikovsky. Like, yeah. Most people, unless you're like in the dance world, most people don't know any other ballets except for Tchaikovsky's.
Okay.
So he has Swan Lake, Sleeping Beauty, and The Nutcracker. Correct. Everyone knows The Nutcracker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's every Christmas, it's everywhere. One thing that I was reminded by my brother is that in the 19th century, the main point for classical ballet was not necessarily the plot of the story, but to showcase the technique of the dancers.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you can see that. You can see that in the version that you watched,
mm-hmm.
how it's a very simple story.
Yeah.
Like, it's a fairy tale still, and it's very fantastical, but the emphasis is really more on, like, who's dancing and, like, how they're dancing and, like, how difficult is it.
Mm.
There's, like, a little bit of a structure to classical ballet that most people don't quite understand. And, like, one of the simplest ways that I can describe it is usually in, like, the second half of the ballet, there is a grand pas de deux, which is like a dance for two, and it's when like the two main principal dancers dance together, whoever their characters are,
mm-hmm.
and then it's followed by two solos, the male and the female, and then they come together again for a coda and they dance together, and so usually like even like the tempo and everything, there's like a structure to it,
mm.
like it's similar to like the sonata format in music.
Okay,
you know that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the fast, slow, dance fast.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's a format to that in the sonata format for classical music.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar with classical ballet in the 19th century. There was... you could break the structure, but there was a structure.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can definitely see that. Nowadays, there are still people who dance classical ballet.
Mm-hmm.
And I like classical ballet. But, you know, the storyteller in me does want more sometimes.
There's a similar debate in the video game industry.
Sure.
Story versus game play.
Right, yeah. So. I'm very big on story and characterization.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Do you want me to give a brief history and story of the ballet then?
Sure. I don't have any of that.
Sure. So, based on the timeless fairy tale, The Sleeping Beauty is one of the world's most beloved and captivating ballets. Featuring incredible music by Tchaikovsky, gorgeous costumes, lavish decor, and exquisite variations for nearly every character. Remind me to tell you what a variation is.
Okay.
The ballet itself dates back to January 1890 premiere at the Imperial Mariinsky Theater in St. Petersburg, and was originally choreographed by Marius Petipa. This ballet marks an important first in ballet history as the first collaboration between the great Russian composer Tchaikovsky and the Russian choreographer Petipa. Petipa is like one of like the one of the biggest names for choreographers.
I saw the name on the version we watched.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'll explain to you why it's on there.
Okay.
The beloved storybook ballet is adapted mainly from Charles Perrault's, I'm still getting that wrong, I'm sure, fairy tale. His fairy tale. The Sleeping Beauty. And it tells the story of the lovely Princess Aurora in their version. She's definitely called Aurora. And she is cursed at her birth by an evil fairy called Carabosse. She's protected by the Lilac Fairy. Rather than falling ill and dying as Carabosse planned, Princess Aurora falls into a slumber of 100 years, and upon her 16th birthday, only to be awakened by a kiss from Prince, I think it's pronounced like Desiree.
Yeah, I was wondering what how to pronounce it. Yeah.
And Princess Aurora's character is the embodiment of beauty, kindness, musicality, vitality, and purity. These virtues are expressed through choreography that appears light and effortless, even though it is one of the most technically demanding parts that serves as the perfect showcase for a prima ballerina. I was watching somebody from the Royal Ballet who said, if you can dance Aurora, you can dance anything in ballet.
Wow.
Okay. One of the fun things about ballet is it's like all in French.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like in music, everything's in Italian. Have you noticed?
Yes.
Like, it's similar in that. It was funny because like when I was in high school, I was in French class, and mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I understand some of this now.
That's funny.
I was like quasi means half. Derrière means behind. Stuff like that.
Mm.
Anyways, so I'll tell you very briefly. So one of the things that takes place in classical ballet, and it's probably found elsewhere too, is the idea of a variation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually pretty simple, except that artistically it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
A variation in ballet is when the choreographer and the composer worked together so that the movement and the sound would match perfectly. So most often what happens, especially with productions that have been around for a while,
mm-hmm.
is music was written, and then the choreographer hears the music and then choreographs to that.
Okay.
For variations, especially because, remember I told you, in 19th century classical ballet, it's very technique driven.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, they like variations because it's their way of showing the audience what these people can do.
Mm.
And so if they went and said, I don't know specifically what they said, but if like Marius Petipa went to Tchaikovsky and said, hey, yay, Tchaikovsky, I really want to show Aurora, like, doing, like, this amazing, like, balance sequence here, mm-hmm. in, like, the Rose Adage when she's dancing with all the princes mm-hmm. in the beginning. Because that's tough.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, this whole section where she's holding on to each of their hands, and they turn her around, and she's on point on the one foot while she's, like, holding the other one straight out. Which is, like, the muscle control for that alone.
Mm-hmm.
But then she'll lift up her hand and then put it right back down again for the next one. And then do the same thing, like, 3 times or 4 times.
I'm sure I saw it.
It's so tough to do that.
Yeah.
And that's why it always gets an applause. Because mm-hmm. if you understand how difficult these things are, the more likely you'll hear applause.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to showcase that, you have to go and talk to the composer and say, this is what I need you to compose. And vice versa, hypothetically. Like, if the composer said, I really want to showcase this musically, but I want to include it in the choreography.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how you get a variation.
Okay.
The composer and the choreographer work together. And so, in classical ballet, there are quite a few variations.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, Sleeping Beauty has one of the most.
Oh, wow.
And so, that's part of the reason why you saw on what you did,
mm-hmm.
his name listed. Mm-hmm. Other than the fact that it's commonly listed. Traditional to show who originally choreographed, because they're still doing those variations.
Those
variations you saw, with some slight differences, I'm sure you saw almost exactly what somebody would have seen back in 1890. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. Now, how do they keep it from changing?
I'm sure there's slight changes.
Uh-huh.
Um,
like, is there a, you know how there's music for,
mm-hmm.
For
some people purposefully change it. Like, some people just don't do the variations.
But is there like a book, like a, you know how they have like a music book?
So a lot of it is just passed down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. A lot of it is, I'm sure some of it is in books, like they've taken pictures or they've drawn. But a lot of it is, I think, just passed down.
Mm.
And you have to consider these, the corps de ballet.
Yeah.
They, for the most part, they were there. And they would just, they'd do new stuff, but then they would repeat sometimes older stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes these people just did the same thing over and over.
So in a certain way, it's like oral tradition of fairy tales, just
right.
For ballet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was just passed down. But,
yeah.
And I'm sure they had notes.
Yeah.
But in the ballet world, though, it's actually, it's like learning a language.
Mm.
Because, I mean, if you were like amazing at singing and someone told you, I need to sing an A flat,
mm-hmm.
and you had a perfect pitch or something.
Yeah.
Like you could just sing an A flat. And
so,
it wouldn't matter.
So there are, because I know you've talked about it, and mm-hmm. you've mentioned poses and things like that. So
right.
is there a lot of variation in the type of dancing that they end up doing, or is it a lot of just mixed matching of classical ballet poses?
The best way I can describe it is a lot of it's tradition,
mm-hmm.
right? You work within a fixed means.
Okay.
So this might not be a great analogy, but you know how a piano has, I don't remember how many keys, like how only so many keys, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's only a certain amount of black and white keys on a piano, but within that you can kind of play as many songs as you want.
Okay.
But you're limited to what's on that piano keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar
mm-hmm.
in dance, especially
okay.
in classical ballet,
yeah,
because it's a little bit more structured and rigid. And you can get something very beautiful. And the idea of ballet is it's so controlled, and yet it seems seamless.
Mm.
Like, it's so tough to do, but it has to look effortless.
Mm.
That's the whole point. And then you can make a social statement about that, but I'm not gonna. But, so there's a lot of choreography that you would just know
yeah.
because you're in ballet.
Okay.
Like arabesque and
mm-hmm.
like, by the cat and,
yeah.
and all these different things, right?
Like, yeah.
You just know it. So like if you're a professional and
mm-hmm.
you know what all these movements are, you could go somewhere and someone would say, I need you to do this, 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 and this. Like
mm.
you could just do it.
Okay.
Like if they said move stage right to stage left while doing these movements, like you could just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say it's like a language.
Yeah. Next we're gonna talk about the hip hop version of Sleeping Beauty.
Jeez.
Just kidding. I don't like hip hop. Okay, that makes
yeah.
sense.
Yeah,
No. The explanation, I think, that really helps. I know it's a loose
yeah.
analogy, but...
But because it's very technique-driven,
mm-hmm.
that's why the story is not as important.
Mm.
It appeals to people's sensibilities of the time
yeah.
because it was still the romantic movement,
mm-hmm.
and so fairy tales were still very popular,
mm-hmm.
and especially like in Russia. And so... It's not surprising that they chose, you know, Sleeping Beauty.
Mm-hmm.
But like there's a ballet about Don Quixote.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's actually pretty fun.
Huh.
Yeah. And there's a lot of weird ones. Like there's La Bayadere, which takes place I think like in India, and I don't really quite know the storyline. It's not as fun as the other ones.
Mm.
But there's a wide range, and some of them get weird.
Mm.
Especially later on, like in the 20th century.
Yeah.
Which I'm not a big fan of.
Mm-kay.
But yeah, anyways, and part of the reason this is a random tidbit, part of the reason why, people, the female dancers go on point
mm-hmm.
on their toes the way that they do, was actually because of the ballet Giselle, which is a story about, I think he's a prince who goes and he's basically kind of like playing a like peasant girl, like pretending he's in love with her, but he kind of just like trying to have his way with her.
Okay.
And then she ends up, like, going insane because, like, he, like, ditches her.
Yeah.
And she's clearly in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so she slowly goes insane and dies. And he feels so bad about it and, like, depressed. Like, I can't remember the whole story, but basically he, like, goes off into the woods and there's these, like, female spirits that are, like, I can't remember if they were, like, scorned lovers or something.
Mm-hmm.
But they're malevolent.
Mm-hmm.
And... In her death, she still protects him because she loves him.
Okay.
But to show in that version how like otherworldly they were.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they came up with the idea of going on point.
Interesting.
Because the movements they did were so unnatural on point. But it became so popular because one, it's technically very difficult.
Yeah.
And it also was so beautiful that like that was what, and I think it was in the 1830s. And so after that, it was much more common to find women going on point.
Which just means standing on their toes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. And you saw that.
A lot. Yes.
Yeah. There's
trying to do it myself while I was watching them. It didn't work.
There's a lot, like I said, there's a lot of structure to it. Like you can see, you may not have noticed it, but you can always tell the difference between, in classical ballet, who the just performers are.
Because
they're in like real costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Like they might do some dances, but like not like crazy dances.
I noticed that. Yeah. I noticed that. The ones...
But they're really there for the storytelling.
Yeah. Like
they're there to fill out the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have some other ones that are usually more character story, like dancers.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes they play like certain courtiers or the friends, or like in the last act of Sleeping Beauty, they play like the random fairy tale creatures that just show up at the funny. Wedding.
Yeah.
I do agree the last act is not my favorite at all. Sleeping Beauty ballet has some of the best music.
Yeah,
out there. Like you could listen to that soundtrack and it's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
I think they make some choices in the last act where it's like, well, they're married now. What should we do that's interesting? Let's just have a bunch of fairy tale creatures go to their wedding. Like Puss in Boots and Little Red Riding Hood and
Cinderella.
Yeah.
Other people who I didn't recognize their names.
Yeah. But
the White Cat.
Yeah, yeah. I think she was like the female companion to Puss in Boots.
Oh, okay. In the synopsis I read, it just listed her as the White Cat and her partner, Puss in Boots.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But where was I going with this? So then you can see like in there's like the performers who are just kind of doing a lot of the acting, and then there's like it's almost like a second class where they kind of fill out the scene or they do a lot of the characterization and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And usually we'll see them in like more actual like ballet skirts, but they're not the tutus.
Oh, okay.
Usually in classical ballet, if someone's in a tutu, they're like the principal dancers.
Okay. I kind of got that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they're like a very pivotal role. Like you saw all the fairies had tutus.
Mm-hmm.
Except for, you know, Carabosse, the evil one, but...
Yeah. So what else about the original ballet?
I mean, I don't have a lot more to go into about the original ballet, but do you want to talk about the one we watched?
I mean, for the most part, like you said, it was after, similar to the Perrault one, being that there's no dialogue, it's all dance and pantomime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the story seemed very... you know, in this case, it was that they were fairies. This one had... So I'm not going to leap onto the third adaptation, but I'm going to say that I saw the progression of... Even though technically the Disney version is an adaptation of the Perrault story, this was definitely an intermediary.
Oh, for sure. We'll get to that. Yeah.
And so you see that in in this case, this is the first version that has an evil person involved. It's the evil fairy, Carabosse, or whatever her name was.
Carabosse?
Carabosse. Okay.
Carabosse.
Carabosse. There you go. Carabosse. And at least in the synopsis I read, they specifically mentioned that she was an evil fairy, not some grumpy, elderly fairy like in the Perrault version.
I know in one of the versions, and I think in the ballet it's similar, but it just depends on who's doing it. But I know in one of the versions of the fairy tale, it was the idea they thought that she died.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the curse or whatever you want to call it in the version, like, went away. And so then they were surprised when it happened.
Oh, okay.
But I think definitely in ours, they still think it was going to happen, but they just thought they were protecting her.
Yeah. Yeah. And for the most part, I think the story is very similar where she's born, they come and give gifts. It's predict...
You could just say the evil fairy.
The evil fairy is upset because she wasn't invited. She curses her to die. Then this one, it's the lilac fairy. I don't know why she's specifically singled out in this version, but She's the most powerful, if I remember right. She's mm-hmm. the most powerful of all mm-hmm. the fairies, and she's the one who cannot stop the curse, but at least change it. And then it goes on, of course, all the spindles, and in this case, they look like needles, are all banned. I'm trying to remember, in this version, does she meet some random... No. It's not some random... To get her to prick her finger...
Well, in
I'm trying to remember
in the version that we watched, and I think in the traditional version, Carabosse comes disguised as like an old woman.
That's what it was. Hooded. Yeah, because the parents are telling her, "Don't touch it, don't touch it."
Yes.
And I'm thinking to myself,
this
is very artistic. Because in real life, the parents probably would have slapped her or something.
I know in some versions, I don't know if this was in the original version or not. Usually Royal Opera Ballet, the other reason why I chose them
mm-hmm.
is one, they're my brother's favorite, and so they're mine because he introduced me to them.
Mm-hmm.
ABT's also really good, I like them, but they are definitely my favorite, and I really like them because they're amazing at their acting.
Yes, I will say.
They are very expressive.
I did pay attention to the facial expressions.
Yes, and you know what they're feeling,
mm-hmm.
and there's... And even, like, their operas are the same. Like,
oh, okay.
Like, their artistic, acting direction is usually really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen productions of operas and ballets from, like, Paris mm-hmm. in their opera house, or even in Russia. And both are praised for their ballet, especially. But in both, it almost seems like there's no emotion. Because they're so technically driven.
Yeah.
But the Royal Ballet Company makes a point to focus on acting.
Okay.
They don't take away from mm-hmm. the technique, but their acting is very important.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons why I chose them, because I think they're more approachable.
Mm. No, I did enjoy it. I mean, granted, there were a couple times when I was getting a little antsy and bored.
Sure.
But for the most part, it was enjoyable. I think seeing it in vivo in real life would have made it a difference.
There's this energy that comes when you're in person that is missing when you're not. In any live theater is better in person.
Yeah, most things are. It's kind of like sports games. I usually care less about sports stuff.
But there's also this connection in mm-hmm. ballet, especially classical ballet, that is missing in a mm-hmm. lot of like high art in performing arts.
Yeah.
Which I find very interesting, because in classical ballet especially, it's one of the few art forms where people will essentially stop the action to mm-hmm. address the audience by bowing.
So like when they perform.
Yeah, did you notice?
I did notice.
Yeah, like especially after solos and stuff mm-hmm. when the audience would be applauding,
mm-hmm.
they would just stop and bow or curtsy and like address the audience and then move on.
Yeah.
And it doesn't break the storytelling or anything,
mm-hmm.
but they do that.
Yeah.
And you don't really see that in anything else, which I think is very interesting. And I think in part because it is so challenging, they do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, even everything, it was very formal, that I will say. Because even the bows at the end took me by surprise.
Very controlled.
Very controlled, yeah.
The whole point is it's...
Not like theater.
It's like beauty through control.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. And that way you can see the history of where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can make the argument that, you know, all these aristocratic courts like Louis XIV and whoever are gorgeous and very, very elegant, but they're very controlled.
Mm.
And there's this idea of the beauty coming from that sense of control. But you make it look effortless, and that's the point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If it didn't look like it was effortless, it wouldn't be good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with singing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you go to see someone, it looks like they're straining, it's not going to be as good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You need to watch someone perform, and it looks so simple, but it's so hard.
Mm-hmm. Which I've seen a couple times. I usually can tell when it's something that's flawlessly done, but because it's, if you really pay attention, you could, I mean, honestly, like there's times when I can look at the ballet people and I'm thinking like, oh, I could do that, you know, and then most of the time I'm like, yeah, right. I standing on my toe, I could do that. Nope, I tried it.
Well, think about the amount of times they're like slow, like a guy's holding a girl and he's like slowly puts her down.
Oh, yeah.
Or something like the muscle control there. And yet, like, it looks so, just looks so light, and it there's something about it. You know?
I was like, how the heck do you get your feet like that?
And then just, like, the speed at what they do sometimes, yeah.
Or the speed was the other one I really enjoyed, because there was some, I can't remember what dance it was, and the legs were just, like, flashing away, like, whoa, I mean, I had a hard time paying attention to where it was, because it was going so fast. It was just, you can't see what I'm doing with my fingers, but I'm imitating it. So, but yeah, no, it was cool. And I think the storyline was very similar. It doesn't have the whole ogre thing. So if you're hoping for
getting eaten, it doesn't end with the kiss, but, so I will say one of the big differences, from the ballet, from the fairy tale. And like I said, it really stems from their emphasis on technique and showcasing that.
Yeah.
Because part of the reason why they did what they did with Sleeping Beauty is so that they could showcase how difficult it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was their point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, they wanted to show people, they wanted to showcase how good, you know, like, their ballet company was, essentially. Yeah. And so they came up with this production for that, for lack of a better way of saying it. But you can say this production, it has almost all the story beats from the original.
Yes.
You know, I mean, take out the whole, like, latter half, right?
Mm-hmm.
But because you're trying to show off your whole company, what do you have to do? If you have a ton of people that you need to showcase, what do you need to do to the story?
Add parts to it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you like, rearrange and you readjust. And so all of a sudden... And that's probably the reason why they will pick stories that fit that.
Because
in the beginning, it's the big party, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're all there to celebrate, like, the christening of the baby, like, the birth of the baby, right?
Yeah.
And so you have all the courtiers, you have everyone coming from far and wide, and then you have all the fairies, and it's like you have the whole company on stage.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But then, in the original story... It doesn't say anything about a party for her. It doesn't say anything about her birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like at around this age.
Oh, when she turned 16.
Yeah, it's just around this age, she just went and found a spindle.
They created,
you know,
a party.
But for the ballet, because they have all this company that they want to showcase.
Which makes sense.
They turn it into this big party. And it's almost like a coming out party.
Yeah, you know? And they had like four suitors who were each there, and they each had a dance with her and stuff like that.
And then she pricks her finger. In one version, I can't remember if I was leading up to this, I can't remember if I said it or not. In one version, she's given a bouquet of roses by the old woman, and in the bouquet is the spindle.
Okay.
And then that's how she pricks her finger. But I don't know if that's original or not. That just might be like a clever adaptation. Just a tricker, you know? But then, you know, 100 years passes, right? Like, the fairy puts them all to sleep, and 100 years passes... And this is why I like to watch the ballet, is because it's always interesting to see what time periods they set it in.
I did notice the costumes changed.
Right?
Yes, I noticed in the hunting party. Because
they did show it started in the 1600s when the original Pearl version is set.
Yeah.
And then 100 years passes, so it's now the 1700s.
In fact, even in the Pearl version, he mentions how... Oh, her dress is a little old-fashioned.
Yeah, everybody in the palace is old-fashioned, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that. And then that I noticed that in the... Because the next part is 100 years later, the prince is there. He's with a hunting party. And there's a
dance. So they introduced the idea of a hunting party with the prince.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like a big group of people.
And I think it was very evident with the women's dress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, because they have the panettiers, which are the big hips for the dresses. And then, you know, he goes off on his own. He's kind of depressed. He wants to find someone who can love him and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're always, like, lovelorn people. And but in the big difference in this version is he comes across the lilac fairy.
Yes.
When he's alone.
And she leads him.
Yeah. I think the idea, the hint at is, like, she realizes he's, like, a good person, like, and he's worthy of her, and that he can save her by waking her up.
I kind of got that feeling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when you're introduced to the vision that he... I don't know if you picked up on that, but that whole...
So I kind of figured out that's what they were doing.
Yeah,
but
that whole act is called the vision.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. If you're listening to the soundtrack, it's on the soundtrack. It says it. But... because I think on the soundtrack it says prologue, and then it's like I can't remember if it says, like, I don't remember what it says for her birthday, but then it's the vision and then it's wedding.
Okay.
But yeah, and so, like, the idea is he's getting visions of Aurora
mm-hmm.
by the Lilac Fairy, and because it's so vivid, it's like she's there.
Mm.
Like, that's the idea. It's very artistic.
Mm-hmm.
and then, you know, they just kind of lean into that, and that's why you have, like, the rest of the dancers come out with them, and they have, like, okay. the tulle on their skirts, so it's, like, really yeah. ethereal, and, you know. And then, of course, she just appears because the vision's over.
Yeah.
And then he's like, where is she? I need to find her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, great. And, of course, you know, in some versions, Carabosse is not there. I think sometimes they include her. I don't know in the original version if she was there or not.
Okay. This one, yeah, she was there with her... with her mice minions yeah. or rats or whatever they were.
Right, yeah. And, of course, you know, he wakes up Aurora. And then the last act is their wedding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's everyone, the whole company's back again. And they're all celebrating at the wedding. And, like there's nothing wrong. Like, literally, it's just happy, happy, happy the whole time.
It's
like,
all dancing.
Yeah. And then it's, like, a bunch of fairy tale creatures randomly mm-hmm. for some reason. And I will say, if you think about it, that is, at least for Tchaikovsky's ballet,
yeah.
That's a little formulaic, because and I think it's like that with other classical ballets, but mm-hmm. I have to go back and look. But if you look at Swan Lake and Nutcracker as well, the last act is very similar in that it has a bunch of people from all over.
Oh, I've never seen either one. So
in Swan Lake,
mm-hmm.
the last act is a big ball. That okay. the queen has thrown for her. I mean, it's technically not the last act, but mm-hmm. it's one of the last acts. Technically, the last act is when all the swans are out. But anyways, the queen is throwing a ball, and she's trying to, like, find someone her son can marry. And so she's inviting people from all over.
Okay.
And so it's people, like, they literally wrote music so that it sounded like it was coming from different places.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Neapolitan, which is, like, a part of Italy. And they mm-hmm. have... Russians and a bunch of others, like,
yeah.
And so, like, the costumes are very specific and so on, and in the Nutcracker it's very similar except that there's the combination of it's like the land of sweets kind of, and so each of them comes and represents a different type of food. So it's like chocolate from Spain, and it's I think it's like tea from England, and it's or China or tea from China or something, and so you got the Chinese dance, and you have the Russian dance.
That's racist.
But then you get Arabian. Arabian's in there, right? Like, and so, like, it makes sense when you look at, like, kind of that formula,
mm-hmm.
how randomly there's just a bunch of fairy tale creatures at the wedding. Like, it is random.
But
if you're thinking from, like, their point of view of.
I've seen enough how TV fill specials with animals, where know? There's, you yeah. know, yeah, where all of a sudden all the. I'm thinking, what is it?
Shrek.
I was thinking Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I forget Shrek. I don't watch that. I think I've watched it once. Aww. Not a big fan.
Whatever. Yeah, but I do agree. I think the last act's not my favorite, if only because there's no more conflict, like, at all. Like, it just, it's fun to watch. The technique is really good. The costumes are gorgeous. The sets are gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely is like, well, it's just happily ever after now.
It's the party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are some people out there who have kind of changed the last act where it's non-traditional. Mm. The one specifically I'm looking at is very non-traditional. His name is Matthew Bourne. I like Matthew Bourne, but he is very odd. I like him because he's very story driven.
Okay.
And obviously the classical ballet is not as driven mm-hmm. by that. And so, but he is controversial for many reasons. But one of the main reasons why he's controversial is he rearranges the music.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Mm.
And, you know, purists don't like that.
Yeah.
But I enjoy his Sleeping Beauty. It's a little weird. I'll say the one weirdest thing about it is he introduces vampires.
I actually remember you bringing that up.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so much fun to watch, though.
Huh.
Yeah. I'll have to show it to you sometime. He mixes classical ballet with, like, more modern ballet and other types of dance.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I'm okay with that. Other than that, I can't think of anything off the top of my head in regards to the ballet that I need to bring up. Is there anything else that you want to talk about?
Nope. It's all dancing to me.
I'm glad that you liked it, though.
I did. I'm actually looking forward to watching another ballet. I wouldn't mind.
I really was not sure how you were going to like it.
I'm a ghetto intellectual.
Sure.
But no, in general, it's because I read a review of the American Ballet, ABC?
ABT.
ABT.
American Ballet Theater.
American Ballet Theater. Of their version of Sleeping Beauty back in 2017, 2018. And one of the guys, the guy who did the review, he was talking to a friend afterwards and he said something like, why is it that people don't like Tchaikovsky? Or, and he named some other ballet composers. And the guy said something along the lines of, it's not the highbrows and the lowbrows who hate them. It's the middle brows. And he goes on to explain how it's kind of like the middle class, the middle groups who don't understand it. When the low class, where I come from, see it, you know, it's amazing because it's something that's outside of their world. And then those who are in the know and understand it, they see the technicality and stuff that and how it works. There's a certain group of people that are more likely to fall asleep during it, you know. And I think thanks especially to, like I said before, I think in the last episode when we did the other one, we were introducing it. Thankfully, you gave me enough of a Ballet for Dummies.
Sure.
About a year ago or so, or 2 years ago, to where that's why. And those who are listening, if you haven't watched a ballet, or if you ever do go see one, I like he said before, you have to. There's so much you have to pay attention to. It's not just the movements, but the face.
Mm-hmm.
At least for the British, and I don't know how the American ones do it, but
I think it just always depends on the company and okay. Their artistic directors. But ABT is really good. ABT's acting is very good. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
I've seen a few different other companies. San Francisco Ballet is pretty good. They put on good productions, usually a little simple, but they're fine. It just depends. You know, everybody's different. You know, art is art, right?
Yeah.
I think it really depends on how traditional you want to be and, like, what is your goal and so on. But I would say, and I fully endorse people seeing ballet and operas and stuff, obviously, but... And I get it, you know. Even for me, there are times watching Sleeping Beauty where it's like, okay, can we move on the plot, you know?
Yeah.
But if you're watching it and you're appreciating what it is and you realize how difficult it is, and yet they make it look so easy and it's still gorgeous, and you know the energy and time and art that went into it, like, it is something else. And I would say if you are interested in getting into ballet, the easiest way to do it is go watch The Nutcracker Christmas. I think The Nutcracker is one of the ballets that is, like, the easiest to get into. And we could maybe do something for that another time, but The Nutcracker was the last ballet that Tchaikovsky wrote, and it didn't do well, like I said, but it's funny because in Fantasia, you know the movie Fantasia Disney did?
Yeah.
When they have the whole Nutcracker suite section, he literally says, although hardly anybody produces the Nutcracker nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is so funny because not too long after they made Fantasia, it like became super popular.
Mm.
But up until then, it was only the suite was popular.
Oh, okay.
Because his music's amazing.
Yeah.
But the ballet hadn't really been performed much up until Balanchine. Yeah, George Balanchine, he's a really big name.
The name sounds familiar. Yeah,
there's the Balanchine. From I think it was in New York, but his version of the Nutcracker is what most people are familiar with.
Okay,
yeah, because he had changed a few things from the original, and anyways, but like once he came out with his production, it blew up, and so like now it's like a Christmas staple. Like every Christmas, like everyone everywhere is doing the Nutcracker.
yeah,
but it's fun. It's a really good story. It's fun. It's good for kids. The music's amazing. Yeah, I think that's the best way I think you can get into ballet is start with the Nutcracker.
Okay. Yeah. I'll have to go see that. I know
yeah.
a lot, like all the females, like my family, my wife, her mom used to go every year.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I enjoyed it. I'm really glad we looked at it. I'm hoping, I don't know what other ballet we could do next, but...
Well, adaptation. I think we'll give the listeners a break, but but there are some we can do for sure.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, we could just do the Nutcracker because that's a book.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
I know we talked about it.
It was based off a book by Hoffman.
Russian.
Hoffman was not Russian.
I remember a conversation we had.
Hoffman was not Russian, but it's okay. Anyways.
Is it English?
I think Hoffman was German.
Interesting. I don't know how I missed
that. Yeah, because I know that the story is set in Germany.
Okay. Okay, I just must not have looked into it enough, but anyway. All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's funny because the Royal Ballet's version of the Nutcracker is mm-hmm. one of the few versions that will actually set in Germany.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can tell in the costumes and in the sets and stuff.
Oh, okay.
But,
that's cool.
Okay, so on a scale from 1 to 10,
mm-hmm.
how would you rate... our scores are so arbitrary.
Yeah, they are.
But how would you rate the ballet? We really have, like, no criteria for our scoring.
No, we don't. 7.68329. No, just kidding. You know what? I mean, it's hard to say because it's the first one I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And so I have nothing to compare it
just
with.
Just give me a random number.
So, overall, I mean, I would say because of the boring parts, that kind of drifted away and I got sleepy a little. But I think it was still well done enough to where I can give it an 8.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, cool. Really high.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I did enjoy it, and I would actually watch it again.
Good. I mean, I would watch it again, too.
Yeah.
The first time that came in my head was a 7.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good solid C. Again, we have no criteria for our scoring system. We just scored them for some reason. Yep. Okay, and then so for this adaptation, I guess let's... for our listeners, this is the section where we talk about what type of adaptation is this. And for our listeners who have not listened to any of our episodes before, welcome. I'm glad you're listening. Thank you. But if you want to check out our trailer, we go into more information about what kind of adaptations we talk about and the criteria. And so we have a few that I came up with. And the first one is faithful to source material.
Mm-hmm.
The second is expanded. The third is artistic, and the last one is message-driven.
Mm-hmm.
So, for the Sleeping Beauty Ballet, which of those would you say this is?
I don't know. Artistic-driven.
Yeah. I was kind of torn between artistic and message-driven.
I don't think there's really a message per se.
The only thing I'm thinking of that would make me think that is because they're so driven by technique.
Okay, I can
than
see
the
that.
Story. But it's definitely more artistic.
Okay.
Yeah. You want to stick with artistic?
Yeah, we'll stick with artistic.
Great. Consensus. Well, thanks for listening to this one. I had a lot of fun with this one. I'm glad this was your first ballet.
Yes.
Next time we watch it, we'll watch it together. Maybe I can point some things out.
Yeah, sure.
Other than that, stay tuned for our next episode where we talk about the Walt Disney 1959 adaptation of The Sleeping Beauty. All right, thank you all.
All right, see you next time.
Next time on Willing to Adapt.
Part of the reason why I wanted to talk about the ballet, besides the fact that I love the ballet, it's good, is because the ballet is actually very important in regards to this adaptation.
It's very much a stepping stone.
Yes.
I think I mentioned that last week.
So which adaptation are we talking about now?
Today we're going to talk about the 1959 Disney version of Sleeping Beauty.
So yeah. You were like pleasantly happy with them.
Not just that, I was actually pleasantly surprised with how intricate and beautiful the animation was.
Right? I think this one's very underrated.
It is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt.
Please like and subscribe. Maybe leave a review or just share us with friends and family.
We would also love if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromi@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.